This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin with Nancy Landry, the Secretary of State for the great state of Louisiana, elected last year, and she is preparing for the biggest election we'll have in their history. Probably turnout will be such that more voters will cast ballots 3 weeks from today than at any time in the history of our state. And to put it in perspective, last time around, Donald Trump won in a landslide in Louisiana. He got over 1.2 million votes in our state. And Joe Biden finished a distant second at 856,000 votes. And yet those 856,000 in a rout, a defeat of landslide proportions for Joe Biden, were more than 300,000 more votes than Jeff Landry got in a race in which he won the governorship without a runoff. So we get juiced up for presidential elections. And Nancy Landry, let's start there. How do you explain that?
You were cutting out, Jim. Well, I'm sorry. Can you sit there?
Well, as far as the interest in presidential elections, why do you think we get more excited about that than statewide races?
Well, statewide races affect people more closely at home than the presidential elections do. But people seem to be more interested in presidential elections. And we always have the highest turnout for our presidential election. We're anticipating a 68 to 71% turnout for this election, and that's, you know, because of the, I guess, all of the attention nationwide on the presidential election that catches everyone's attention, and you have people who sometimes don't vote in local elections that are more interested in the presidential and want to have their voice heard for the presidential.
You're hearing the voice of Nancy Ruth Landry. She is the Secretary of State, won an easy victory last year as a person who heads elections in our state, has a BA and a JD from LSU, but was educated at Lafayette High, as was the Attorney General, right?
Liz That's Murrow. Right. We were high school classmates. I was actually a year ahead of her, and we grew up in the same neighborhood, so it's kind of an interesting roundabout way that we ended up on the same path in politics together, but it's been a fun journey.
A lot of power from Acadiana in Louisiana right now. And we have the chance to register. This is the last day, right? This is the final gun if you want to participate, if you haven't registered for the November 5th election.
Today is the deadline, and you have to register online. The deadline to register in person has already passed. And so if you want to register, you go to govote.com, G-E-A-U-X, vote.com. If you are a U.S. citizen, a Louisiana resident, and you will be 18 years old by November 5th, you are eligible to register to vote. And so go to geauxvote.com. We have a very high registration rate in Louisiana, but there are a few people who may have recently turned 18 or maybe have never voted before and are suddenly interested, and today's the deadline. So if you want to vote November 5th, you got to register today.
And we often are criticized for low turnout elections like the governor's election, but this is one in which we not only have a big turnout expected of about 70%. But we do have one of the top 10 states as far as registration, don't we?
We do. We hover around 90% in our registration rate. So we have a very high percentage rate. People
90%
of our eligible voters are registered to vote. And so it's, you know, we're proud of that. But it's always a moving number because we always have people dying and we always have people turning 18. So we still try to reach out to the new voters and let them know that if they're going to be 18 by November 5th, they can register to vote. But today's the deadline.
And early voting starts, 3 days from now?
Early voting starts Friday. And for presidential elections now, we have 10 days of early voting. So there's no excuse to not vote in Louisiana. You have plenty of opportunity to vote. We have 10 days of early voting from October 18th through October 29th, but not on Sundays. We don't early vote on Sundays. And early voting runs from 8:30 in the morning till 6 p.m. And then if you can't vote in person early, Election Day is November 5th.
877-217-5757 for Nancy Landry, who's full of vim and vigor. You got a spring in your step. This is 3 weeks from the finish line. It's hard to believe we're this close.
It is an exciting time. This is a big week because we have the deadline to register and we have the beginning of early voting. So we're really excited and we're ready to go. We've been working for this for the past year and a half, getting ready for this election. Elections take a lot of advance work and it's a lot of planning and it's all coming together now. And so we're really excited about it and we're ready to go.
Well, you wrote a fine op-ed piece a few days ago for the Advocate and Picayune, the newspapers of record, and the headline, Louisiana Elections Are Safe and Secure. We haven't had the same kind of pushback that other states have about whether or not things are on the up and up. Why do you think we're doing perhaps this better than others?
We have a unique state. We're ranked in the top 10 in the nation in election integrity, and I attribute that to what I call the four P's of election integrity, and that's our people, our policies, our procedures, and our physical security of our equipment. And those things work together. They provide checks and balances and make sure that our elections are safe and secure. So we're ranked in the top 10 by the Heritage Foundation, and the Electoral Integrity Project ranked us first in the South. And then the nonpartisan Louisiana Legislative Auditor audited our elections after the 2020 presidential election and found that we had safeguards in place to protect the integrity of our elections. And so you can vote in Louisiana feeling confident that your vote is going to count and that our elections are safe and secure.
You wrote in your piece, with an eye toward the future, you championed 11 bills to make elections safe and secure. What were some of the ideas that were embraced in those bills?
Those bills were 11 election integrity bills that passed the legislature this past session. They focused on three main areas. One, they closed some loopholes around ballot harvesting laws. We have strong anti-ballot harvesting laws in Louisiana. And two, they helped us clean up our voter rolls. They provided some additional tools for us to clean our voter rolls. And third, they made it the tabulation of absentee ballots uniform across the state. And that was a recommendation of the auditor that we had been trying to pass for some time. And so we were very happy. All 11 bills passed, and Governor Landry signed them into law. And so we are on our way to be even more higher ranked than the top 10, we think. And so this is really going to bring us closer to number one in election integrity.
Now, anytime machines are used, and of course we've also had different questions about paper ballots, but machines, of course, are in the worst case scenario, they could be tampered with, but you're confident that's not going on. Why are we immune from this if we are?
So our machines are never, ever connected to the internet, despite what you may hear. And they were actually manufactured in the 90s and before the internet was even invented. Our equipment's very old and we need to get a new system, and that's another story. But we also have policies and procedures in place that protect the security of our equipment. So we test and seal our machines with a tamper evidence seal in a public meeting before every election. And then that seal is removed also in a public meeting. And so they're just lots of checks and balances like that that protect the integrity of the election, checks and balances all along the way that make sure that that no one has access to those machines and that they're not that they haven't been tampered with, and if they have, that we would know.
877-217-5757 is your number for Nancy Landry, the Secretary of State for Louisiana. Brooke Thorington, the Capitol reporter for WRKF and WWNO, is on the line. Brooke, good morning.
Good morning. Secretary Landry, what is your advice for individuals, for example, in nursing homes who don't have immediate family members to assist them with their absentee ballot? Is this not possibly voter suppression?
Thank you for that question. We have an awesome program called the Nursing Home Program, and we encourage all nursing home residents to join that program, and that is a program that allows our registrar of voters to go out to the nursing homes, and they assist the nursing home residents with their ballots. Sometimes they even bring the machines in to allow them to vote on the machines. But it's a great program. It makes sure that someone who is not trying to influence their vote, it's a professional election administrator who's trained and who's there to help them and assist them with their ballots. And it's a great program. And they'll be going out to nursing homes very shortly. Some of them may already be in the process of doing it. And they make sure that all of our nursing home residents get to exercise their right to vote.
And you encourage us, if we're so inclined, to download what is a free app, a mobile app. How do we do that?
It's a free award-winning app called the Go Vote mobile app, and that's GEAUX Vote. And you can find it on your app store for your iPhone or your other kind of phone. And it's free, and it's award-winning, and it provides great information about when, where, and how to vote, and even your sample ballot.
877-217-5757, your number. We'll be back after this brief pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and your number 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Nancy Landry, the Secretary of State for Louisiana, 3 weeks from the election. And, of course, there is a lot of preparation involving her office for what is going to be the biggest turnout election probably in our state's history. Over 2 million people will cast ballots 3 weeks from today, with a turnout expected to be somewhere, as the Secretary said, between 68 and 71%. And Nancy Landry, just briefly, she's a fascinating person with a great backstory, made in Japan, right?
That's right. My dad was serving in the Navy, and we were stationed in Japan when I was born.
And moved to Louisiana rather quickly, grew up in Lafayette, graduate of LSU, Juris Doctor, and a degree in psychology.
That's right. I had an undergraduate degree in psychology, decided I did not want to pursue that, and went to law school instead. And never looked back.
And you were an independent until 2008.
I was an independent. And first time I ran, in fact, I ran as an independent. I lost that election by 33 votes. And then became a Republican.
Usually it's hard to get elected when you don't pick a
right.
side.
And I was a conservative independent, and so it was easy for me to make the decision to become a Republican. And so I became a Republican, and that was in 2008, I think. And so I ran again and won and served 3 terms in the legislature, and then became the first assistant secretary of state, which was second in command, the chief deputy. Is another
to
name
Kyle
for it,
Ardoin,
to Kyle Ardoin,
and then
right.
one going away in the last election. And it is a big job. I remember Fox McKithen, and I think he accurately portrayed it, the third job in state government behind the governor and lieutenant governor.
It is the third in the succession, so if anything should happen to the governor and the lieutenant governor,
we'd have Governor Landry.
That's right, another Governor Landry.
No relation, though.
That's right, no relation that we know of, though we're both from the same area, so it's possible somewhere down the line.
Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hi, Pat. Hey, how y'all doing? So I'm going to use this as an example, but like when it comes to a pilot flying an airplane, we don't just let anyone fly an airplane. If it comes to a crane operator, not just anyone operates a crane, but when it comes to voting, why is there this need to get everybody out there to vote, especially people that don't know what they're doing or may have no clue what they're even voting for?
All right. So you're talking about outright voter suppression. By the way, there are various levels of knowledge, too. But I don't think we want to go there, but I don't want to answer the question for you. But what about those who and you've stated that, and you did in your editorial, they should educate themselves before they go in the voters'
We always encourage voters to educate themselves about what they're voting for, but everyone has a right to vote unless they've been interdicted in Louisiana. And so it takes all types of people. We want our entire state represented in our elected officials. And so everyone has the right to vote, and we respect that right, and we provide the opportunity for everyone to vote unless they've been interdicted or they're not a U.S. citizen or some other reason why they can't vote. So we respect and encourage everyone to vote. Of course, we do encourage them to read up on the candidates, to read up on the constitutional amendments, and to talk to other people if they don't know how to vote, to talk to people they trust and ask their opinions. That's how most people get their information, and we encourage it, and the system works. So,
Gretchen in St. Francisville. Gretchen, you're on with
Good
Nancy
morning.
Landry.
With such integrity in our voting system, I am thrilled to hear all of this, but I can't help saying that I pray we vote for the candidate with great integrity.
All right. Well, thank you, Gretchen. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Landry. What other provisions are for the college students to vote? I know when I help take people to the polls at some of the universities, there was some gaffes or some trouble for the students to vote.
What about college students?
College students are, if they're registered to vote here, they can vote here. Some of them remain registered in their, if they're from another state, they'll stay registered in their home state and vote absentee in their home state. But if they're registered here, they vote just like anyone else. A lot of them remain registered at their parents' home where they're domiciled, and they don't register at the university where they are. They register at in their hometown, and they vote absentee, or they go in during early voting to vote in person, early voting, or on election day.
Right.
So it's just the same as anybody else.
Tom on Bluebonnet asks if voting commissioners get paid.
Voting commissioners do get paid. They make $200 a day. It's a very long day, but it's a great way to make some money right before Christmas. And we encourage people who want to learn more about elections, who want to help serve their community, who want to help us put on the elections, to contact their local clerk of court about serving as a elections commissioner. We need these people to do this in order to put on an election. It takes thousands of people across the state. So anybody interested, we would love to have you take the training course and get certified as an elections commissioner.
Leah Thompson of Prairieville says, I'm an election commissioner in charge, currently seeking alternates to fill commission seats assigned to my work precinct. I'm not the only one. So she adds me, encourages me to admonish or encourage listeners to quickly get certified.
Yes, and many clerks of court allow you to take the training course online, or they offer it in person. You just contact your local clerk of court and thank you for serving as commissioner in charge. Commissioner in charge make even more money, and they're the ones who kind of have some experience.
Commissioner in charge, that's the title.
Commissioner in charge is the commissioner who is in charge of the other elections commissioners at the precinct.
Got you. James in Mid-City. James, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Ma'am. Is the state of Louisiana participating in the ERIC system? And if not, why not?
We are not participating in the ERIC system. That was a decision that the previous Secretary of State made to withdraw from that system due to what he perceived as violations of the contract with us. And so we have not rejoined ERIC. In fact, many other states have withdrawn now. And just for your listeners to know, ERIC is a group that compares voter data across states to make sure that voters are not registered in more than one state. And so since other states have withdrawn, it's not as useful as it used to be either. And so what we've been doing since I've been Secretary of State is we've been entering into individual agreements with our neighboring states to compare our anonymized voter data to find out if anybody's registered in both states. Right. And that will take the place of what the services that we were getting from ERIC.
James and Metairie, please be brief. James, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim and Ms. Landry. Recently, I heard an election official on the right, very minor position, state that they don't trust the post office employees to faithfully handle and deliver mail-in ballots because the Postal Union endorsed Kamala Harris. Your comments, please.
All right.
We encourage people whenever possible to vote in person, either early voting in person or on election day in person. We do have problems with delays in mail. I can't really, I'm not going to accuse any postal employees of doing anything untoward, but we do have delays with election mail, and we sometimes have people whose ballots don't make it in time. And we, if you are going to vote, if you have to vote absentee, do it as early as you possibly can, and so you can track your ballot and make sure that it gets there in time. And if it doesn't get there, you can go and vote in person if necessary on election day. So it is an option. We have 12 excuses that allow you to absentee vote if you can't be there on early voting and or election day. But we do encourage people to vote in person when they can. That way you know your vote counted.
As we head to the break, David in Atlanta. David, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Madam Secretary, do you know of or believe in any voter fraud of any kind in the 2000 election?
All right. Any voter fraud, I guess, either here or other places that you're aware of?
I can only speak to here, and there was no widespread voter fraud in Louisiana in 2020. We always have isolated instances of, someone trying to commit fraud here and there, and we vigorously investigate and refer them for prosecution, and we have had some prosecutions in the past. I'm not sure if it was from the 2020 election or a different one, but, we have had some prosecutions.
Okay. We'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Nancy Landry going into overtime, when Robin says we only have time for one more caller, so we hopefully will have her back. And there is much to talk about regarding the closed primary, which we could spend the rest of the show and then some talking about. But come 2026, there will be some major adjustments unless things are changed. But Nancy Landry is preparing for an election 3 weeks from today and is confident things will be run well, and that the state will have an election of integrity, as we always have, as far as we know, in recent vintage anyway. Walter and Zachary, you'll be our final caller. Walter, you're on with Secretary Landry.
Thank you, Jim. Two questions for Secretary Landry. First, how many incidents of illegal ballot harvesting have been indicted and or adjudicated in the last decade or so?
Well, she's talking about Louisiana, but it's a legitimate question, but you answer it whatever way you want. I don't know of any in Louisiana.
I don't know of any in Louisiana. We investigate a few allegations almost every election, but I don't know of any that have been referred for prosecution. So we did tighten the laws around ballot harvesting in this legislative session and close some loopholes that were, people were using to take advantage of these loopholes and get around the spirit of the law. And so we feel like things are a lot tighter now. We will be able to, investigate and prosecute any of the new violations and any of the violations of the previous law. We have very strong anti-ballot harvesting laws in Louisiana.
And as you have stated, it has always been illegal for people not citizens to cast ballots, and
that's
correct. We don't have evidence of that going on here either.
That's correct. But you have to be a U.S. citizen to both register to vote or to vote in Louisiana, and the consequences are severe if you try to do so and you're not a citizen.
Well, thank you, Secretary Landry. It's been a pleasure, and let's do it again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Remember to go vote.
And that's G-E-A-U-X.
That's right.
I get my Cajun spelling right. G-E-A-U-X. Vote.
.com.
Okay. Kevin Cope is our guest now, the former head of the LSU Faculty Senate. He held that job for almost a generation. He remains a professor at Louisiana State University, has been there for 41 years. His face is on the wall at Allen Hall, which is one of the historic buildings in the quadrangle, named after the former governor, Oscar K. Allen, the pride of Winfield, Louisiana. And Kevin Cope, it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir.
Always a pleasure to talk to the most articulate man north of Antarctica. And by the way, that face on the wall, at least it's not a wanted poster.
Well, the face that I saw on the website not so long ago, I don't know if it's been changed, but it looks like it might be a few years old.
Well, I'm taking the story of Dorian Gray and turning it upside down. I'm aging and the picture's staying the same.
Well, you, of course, follow what's happening at Tigertown, and you locked horns with the previous president and chancellor, King Alexander, who was, I think you would acknowledge, playing a pretty weak hand when he had 13 budget cuts. But the biggest objection the faculty had was when he got rid of a professor who was using bad words in the classroom, allegedly. But and he was under censure. He was under censure for years by his own faculty. Is Bill Tate a breath of fresh air, or is the jury still out on the guy who's been around now for 3 years?
I think the jury is going to stay out for a long time. First of all, I should mention that King Alexander, technically at any rate, is still under censure. As you note, the generations come and go, so I don't know how many people remember the whole period. But that censure has not been lifted by the current administration of the Faculty Senate. As for Bill Tate, well, we have yet to determine whether he is a leader or not. Much of what he has done might be better described as following. So if you're looking for somebody to censure a leader, well, I don't know. We've got a follower that we're dealing with.
877-217-5757. But, and I have, of course, taken aim at Dr. Tate on a few things, maybe more than a few, but he does work at the pleasure of the board, which is appointed by the governor. So it's not like he can just do anything without some potential repercussions, Dr. Cope.
This is certainly true. Of course, it could be argued that one of the reasons that a university president or university system president in the United States is so highly, some might say outrageously paid or overpaid, is because it's a high-risk position. And part of what you're attempting to do in that position is take bold positions and stand up for an institution that sometimes comes into friction with the rest of society. If you're not willing to do that, you have to ask why you're being paid a high-risk salary.
Well, he gets a high pay, and now he's got an incentive bonus just to show up every year. That's six figures. That's nice, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure it's nice for him. I'll tell you, I show up for free, so there's a deep discount with respect to the faculty.
Yeah, well, I remember back in the day, some of my dear friends were university professors who would hang out in coffee shops, and one of them was Ron Siebling, who was a microbiology legend, legendary professor, and trained many doctors and others in life in Louisiana, and he was making, at the end of his career, $60,000 a year, and that's not so long ago. That's in the 21st century. And our buddy Hugh Woodstock Buckingham, he once did a show, and he said something that got him demoted at LSU, and he said it cost him $12,000, that he went from 66 to 54 because of our radio show, Kevin. So be careful what you say today.
Well, I certainly will. I will just make up for it by playing the lottery, I guess.
Well, what about tenure? Do you think that tenure is tenuous at LSU?
Tenure is tenuous not only at LSU, but everywhere in the nation, because the academy generally is under attack, and I'll have to admit that perhaps some of the criticism that's mounted at American universities is justified. As you know, I'm a Harvard graduate, and some of the antics up at Harvard, including appointing a president, the past president, not the current one, who basically had minimal qualifications at best, do merit criticism. But, of course, the university, whatever you think, pro or con, up or down, is a place of debate. And without some degree of protection, nobody is ever going to debate. They're just going to toe the party line. Now, if Louisiana wants to be the kind of state that just imitates or follows or otherwise is derivative, fine, that's what it's going to get.
877-217-5757. A listener correctly notes, this is Hal in Monroe, that Collis Temple, LSU board member, was on this show a week ago and noted that as many as 100 people in the athletic department make over $200,000 a year. So The athletic department still has a lot of clout and a lot of money, unlike some other entities at LSU. And I don't think professors are they're not poverty stricken, but they're not at that level either. Most of them are not.
Sure. Well, here's the dilemma. That is, it is true that most people who teach, at least at a major university, not perhaps in some of the smaller campuses around Louisiana, do make rather more than the national average, whether you regard that as the median income, the average income, the house income, whatever metric you want to choose. However, the qualifications to become a professor and the number of tests and hurdles that you have to pass are extremely high. So if you applied the same reasoning and said, oh, well, those tests, those qualifications, those hurdles don't matter, you ought to make what everybody else makes, then we ought to lower some other salaries as well, including those of attorneys, CEOs, insurance executives, and the like.
Well, LSU is buoyant right now after defeating Ole Miss 29-26. The Tigers are ranked eighth in the nation. They head to Arkansas as 2.5-point favorites over the Razorbacks, but football, I loved him, Mike Martin, the previous chancellor, said, is the front porch of the university. You would acknowledge that, even though I don't know if you go to the games anymore, but Kevin Cope is a rough-and-tumble guy who grew up watching professional wrestling in his hometown of San Diego.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that professional wrestling is honest. Everybody knows that it's fake. Professional wrestling plays up its fakery, and people pay in order to enjoy the amusement value of fakery. Football, to a degree, is fake as well. That is, we pretend that it's a means of advancement for minorities and other underprivileged persons. It is, in fact, not. It's a way of entertaining wealthy white men while others sweat it out on the field. So there's fakery everywhere, and I would submit that the fakery of professional wrestling is rather less and rather more constructive than the fakery down there on the gridiron.
Well, our friend David in Atlanta, who called a little earlier today, who's also a professional wrestling aficionado, he quotes Bobby the Brain Heenan, the late Bobby Heenan, who, of course, you know. He said, "He said, win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat."
Yeah, that's the approach. And of course, if you get down to football, football is basically a game about force. And you could make a plausible argument, I won't do it, I'll just throw it out there, that force is about cheating. Force is what you use when you can't get your will, your way by normal procedures or legal means.
Okay, well, what about bringing the Tiger back to Tiger Stadium? Some of us like that idea.
This is the latest appalling idea. That is, first of all, there are two grounds on which you can argue against this. One is that it is simply vulgar. That is, to see a stadium filled with screaming, partially educated fans exhorting a poor animal into some kind of ridiculous performance is on the brink of disgusting. Another argument we made is that, of course, this is cruel. An animal that has a degree of dignity at any rate, some might say a creation of God or whatever, should not be held up as some kind of object of crowd entertainment, let's call it.
Well, it is a topic for discussion, and Robin has found a tape of the former caretaker, Paul Marks, that we'll be hearing sometime in the next few days. He used to have to bring the Tiger home to his family estate on Raymond Avenue before the game to make sure he was in the cage. He got to the point where he didn't want to come in the cage. But we'll spend a few more minutes with Kevin Cope when we return after this. This is Jim Easter. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Kevin Cope, who presides at Allen Hall. Right now, he's, I think, on a sabbatical in Maine, but my guess is that Kevin will be casting his ballot absentee for Louisiana, and we are 3 weeks away from an election. And Tiger Stadium used to feature Mike the Tiger every game. He would make a cameo and intimidate the heck out of the opposition. And Robin Miller in The Advocate on Sunday had a the skeletal remains of Mike First, who lived to be 20 years old, at a very small habitat, and came to every game, the oldest Tiger to ever live at LSU. You can go to Foster Hall, 119 Foster Hall, and you can see Mike and what's left of him. But Kevin Cope, this current Tiger has a lavish habitat, and he needs to do a little more running. He's overweight. He's a lot like the players. There's a player, as I noted, who's 334 pounds. And I just find it a bit curious that we're concerned about the safety of the Tiger, but what about the players who have CTE, who are now encouraged to be big, really big, as in dangerously big, who will have heart issues and strokes and all kinds of blood pressure problems as a result of all the extra girth? We need girth control. And no matter how hard we try, there's always going to be the element of head trauma when you're tackling people and being hit by people. So should we ban football, Kevin Cope?
Well, perhaps we should. This is another element in the sanctuary that we were talking about earlier. We pretend that football is good for young people, that it's part of a physical conditioning program, when in fact, as you correctly point out, it has one of the worst health influences of any human activity. So if these kinds of injuries were besetting any other line of work, you can be sure that OSHA or some other agency would be on the case there. But for whatever reason, football enjoys some level of immunity.
Well, Kevin Cope, it is always a pleasure to hear your distinctive voice, and let's keep it going. We'll be calling again soon. Thank you for joining us,
Dr. Cope. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good one.
And we're joined now by Dr. E. Fay Williams, the pride of Alexandria, who calls Washington, D.C. home. And she is here to talk about the lay of the land 3 weeks before the election. And it is close enough that quite likely it's a turnout election, meaning who gets his or her vote out will win the election. And several stories over the last week has been about men being reluctant to vote for Kamala Harris and black men being reluctant to vote, and even some black women. I saw a poll the other day with Trump at 12% among black women. I think that's an exaggerated number, but if that poll were correct, that would mean one out of eight black women in the U.S. would be voting for Donald John Trump. Fay Williams, what's the deal with the reluctance to embrace a black woman who would, of course, be a trendsetter, a pioneer, if you will, if she were to win?
Well, good morning, Tim. How are you? How's everybody
Fine.
In Louisiana? You know, I'm not, obviously, we have to be concerned about if this person wins again, but I'm sure that black women in particular, and a goodly number of white women, even though the polls are not showing as many as we would hope for, will be out there every day. We have been out there every day. You know how fast we supported her. Black women, the very first day, raised a lot more money than we've ever raised for anybody. And economists had a good report this morning for the Harris-Waltz ticket. Economists are telling us that our economy is the enemy of the world. It's been up in the past 3 years under Biden-Harris. So that's one of the main things that people are, you know, concerned about. And under a recent survey, we've learned that inflation is remarkably down. That was not expected, but it's being reported. That's true. So a lot of good things are happening. And, you know, many times black people vote early, but so many of us don't get to vote early. And we'll be out there. In these next 3 weeks, you're going to see some changes that are going to be made. There is no way that the American people are going to elect a person that they already know has done some weird things and now is saying that he wants to be a dictator. And the person he elected to go along with him has, said that this person is a Hitler-like person. And just over this past weekend, we knew that Trump was giving our materials that we needed during COVID to Putin. We are not a communist country, so I know we're not going to be supporting a communist lover.
877-217-5757, as you can hear. Fay Williams is a partisan from the left. And former President Barack Obama, speaking last week, said he was speaking directly to black men when he suggested some aren't feeling the idea of having a woman as president. What does he mean by that, Fay Williams?
Well, that's... that's unfortunate, but we know that that's kind of a thing among all men in this country. They tend to lean toward men and believe they can do a job better than they can. But I think Kamala Harris is changing that. She's out there every day. She's bringing joy. She's giving us facts. She's giving us proposals she had to work with, not concepts, but she's giving us actual plans that she has. So I believe over the next 3 weeks, when men have an opportunity to make up their minds what they're going to do, they're going to see that Kamala has real plans, not just concepts.
Well, the story in the New York Times Sunday reads like this: Vice President Kamala Harris has improved her party standing among black voters since President Biden left the race, but she still significantly trails Biden's 2020 share of the key Democratic constituency. Biden ended up with 90% of the black vote in 2020. Nearly 8 out of 10 black voters nationwide say they will vote for Ms. Harris, but 74% of black voters who said they would support Joe Biden before he dropped out of the race in July, that's up. So her percentage is up. But as mentioned, Biden did really, really well last time. And even though he won the overall vote by more than 7 million votes, he still he had some three states in particular that were narrow enough in the Electoral College that if all three had gone for Donald Trump, Trump would have been the president. Does the Electoral College, particularly in these swing states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, does the Electoral College make it a whole new math game when it comes to voters overall, and particularly for constituencies? And the biggest minority constituency in those states comes from African-American voters, Dr. Williams.
Well, I think we're not, depending upon just African-American voters. You know, it seems that each time we have to be the saviors of the Democratic Party, whether it's black men or black women. But I don't think that's the case this year. When you look at the fact that a long line of Republicans have announced they're voting for Kamala Harris, like Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney, General Milley, Kathy Hutchinson, Sarah Matthews, Michael Steele. I mean, just so many. You can't see that some of them are not going to make up for whatever slight loss there might be in the black vote. Black people are asking for things. Last time, remember, black women asked for a judge on the Supreme Court. We got it, but we worked hard for it to elect Joe Biden to do that. He kept his promise. What the things that Kamala Harris is promising now, many people are going to get involved in these last few weeks and see that she is the one who is offering the things they need. And so I believe we'll have a lot of movement in these next couple of weeks. Many times the black churches and all don't get really involved until the last 2 or 3 weeks of the campaign. We've not seen that big push yet. That's coming, though. And I believe on Election Day, we'll see a victory for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. I just don't understand why we wouldn't. Some people are just a little slow. They've had other things to worry about.
Well,
but when you think about somebody who's going to call out the military on you, you're going to think twice whether you're going to vote for him.
Well, you are confident, and I believe Faye Williams is a sincere person, but it is a close race, and it comes down to turnout, and maybe the media are harping on it too much, but here's another story. Today's New York Times, front page: Harris fighting to bring back a trusted block. In the final weeks of the presidential campaign, Vice President Harris is contending with the erosion within the Democratic coalition that put Barack Obama and Joe Biden in the White House and growing more dependent on white voters historically aligned with Republicans. And there are some. You mentioned it's amazing that Dick Cheney is supporting Kamala Harris. Who would have thought that? But nationally, Harris in the New York Times poll is up by 3 points. But Hillary won the overall vote by more than 2 points and still lost the election. And it's this Electoral College is highly unfortunate, but that's what we have. And right now, the swing states are all within the margin of error, every one of them. A listener asked a good point, Faye. Do you think she chose the right running mate?
Oh, I think so. I'm very pleased with her running mate. He touches perhaps a constituency that she wouldn't be able to touch in these last few weeks. But you can see that she's spending a lot of time in those states that you mentioned that can be a problem when it comes to which ones you have to win in order to get the number of electoral votes that you need. She'll be spending a lot of time there, but also her running mate will, as will many of the people who are supporting her. So I think that vote will come up. Am I concerned? Of course I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the possibility of Donald Trump ever being in charge of anything in our country. So that's what's going to make all of us work harder, including those many Republicans who are supporting Kamala Harris.
Well, thank you as always. We appreciate your enlightenment and erudition, and we'll be calling again for Dr. Faye Williams, a Louisiana legend and treasure. Thank you, Dr. Williams.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. Have a blessed day.
Thanks for listening. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Stay safe and stay tuned.